This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
On today's program, our guests are Lindsay Constance, Shawnee Councilwoman, and Emily Libla, Program Facilitator for the Pacamama Alliance. They join host Craig LeBeau to discuss evidence-based solutions to climate change. Lindsay and Emily helped organize Advancing Climate Solutions, a local workshop for area politicians and environmental activists to initiate local climate actions based on the book Drawdown. Our goal is to inspire community-level action to reverse global warming. But first, the environmental news for the week of 12-17-18 on Eco Radio KC. My name is Teresa Wilkie. USA Today reports, Trump plans to reclassify nuclear waste, and that alarms environmentalists. United States Department of Energy has requested to reclassify some nuclear waste left from the production of nuclear weapons to lower its threat level and make disposal cheaper and easier in several places around the nation. We have a media release from Powell Gardens. Powell Garden reports, the Missouri Clean Water Commission voted to reverse the Valley Oaks expansion permit during a public meeting in Jefferson City, Missouri last week. After hearing from attorneys on all sides, the commission ruled to withdraw the permit issued by the Department of Natural Resources, and expansion of the Valley Oaks State Company confined area feeding operation will not proceed. USA Today reports, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke is leaving the administration at the end of the year. Zinke has been embroiled in several investigations. Until his successor is announced, he will be replaced by Deputy Secretary David Bernhardt, who is a former energy lobbyist and who is expected to pursue fossil fuel development and downplay conservation. The Guardian reports, Brett Hartle, Government Affairs Director for the Center for Biological Diversity, called Bernhardt the mastermind between major efforts of the agency. I don't think anything will change in terms of what's happening inside Interior, though it's nice Zinke's gone, Hartle said. In a statement, Nancy Pelosi said, Zinke has been a shameless handmaiden for the corporate and special interests. His staggering ethical abuses have delivered a serious and lasting blow to America's public lands, environment, clean air, and clean water. Various scandals have marked Zinke's time in office. The Vox reports negotiators at COP24 in Katowice, Poland, reached agreement, bolstering the Paris Accord. The Guardian reports experts warn the UN Climate Accord inadequate and lacks urgency. The Trump administration's latest proposal to weaken federal clean water rules chips away at decades of environmental protections. The rules were designed to protect millions of acres of wetlands and thousands of miles of streams from pesticide runoff and other pollutants. The Hill reports, the latest saga of EPA's divorce proceedings against environmental science unfolded at hearings of the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee, CASAC, on particulate air pollution. CASAC has long relied on scrutinizing the key issues based upon input from subcommittees of knowledgeable experts. However, the EPA has suddenly terminated the subcommittees assembled to provide input to CASAC on both particulate and ozone pollution. Heretofore, EPA processes to build policy on sound science has been admired and emulated worldwide, that is, until the current administration.
All right, this is Craig LeBeau, and thank you for joining us here on Eco Radio. My guest today is Lindsay Constance and Emily Libla, and you heard what they are doing. So welcome, Emily and Lindsay.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us here.
So you did some workshop that was based upon the book Drawdown. Tell us what Drawdown is.
Yeah, so Project Drawdown came about when Paul Hawken, who's an author and entrepreneur and environmentalist, started asking the question, what would it really take to reverse global warming? Can we do it? And so they gathered a group of people who were up to looking at that question to pour through mountains of financial and climate data to look at what does it tell us about what it would actually take to reverse global warming. And so through the process, they came up with the 80 top most substantive solutions that would actually result in a reversal, if they're scaled up, in the warming in our atmosphere.
And in the past, I think the goals, and when they've had these environmental summits, have been looking at stopping global warming from getting any worse. And now we're talking about actually reversing that and going back.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between what are the things you're going to have to do to reverse that maybe would not have otherwise taken place?
Yeah, when we look at reversing global warming, we're basically looking at two types of actions. The first type of action is one that reduces emissions. And I think in the past, that's where a lot of the focus has been placed on in terms of renewable energy and other solutions that reduce the amount of emissions that are going up into the atmosphere. But when we talk reversal, we also have to talk about bringing carbon back home. So we need solutions that sequester carbon, whether that's regenerative agriculture, afforestation, rethinking our food system. We need both sides of that coin to achieve reversal.
All right. And one of the things in terms of natural methods of sequestering carbon has been plants. So how much of our problem now, you know, we hear about putting fossil fuels in, but how much is our problem related to deforestation?
Well, I think the two problems go together. A lot of the practices that involve deforestation also put emissions up into the atmosphere. So I think they're really linked. And so I can't give you the exact numbers of how much carbon, you know, one way or the other, although some of that information is in the drawdown book. But looking at what we're sequestering is really important, as well as the practices that contribute to the emissions in the practice itself, as well as releasing the carbon that's already sequestered. We have to look at both of those.
Well, and I think from the workshop, some of the solutions that local leaders were looking at really did encompass both of those types of solutions. So they were looking at ways in which cities can reduce their emissions through energy upgrades, as well as investing in renewables, and then also looking at tree planting, native grasses, and things at a local level that also sequester that carbon. So I was really encouraged to see the local leaders at our workshop looking at both methods to, reduce global warming.
All right. And to look at the deforestation aspect, once we've cut down the forest, how do we turn that back? How do we reverse that?
Yeah, I think there's a number of solutions when you look at the work of Drawdown that look at protecting the forest that we still have, that look at afforestation, which is actually creating new forest. And I am not an expert in forestry. However, I know that when we look at that issue, of course, we want to look at the not just monocropping of trees, mm-hmm. but actually looking at the entire ecosystem of a forest and looking how can we create conditions in which, one, the earth can regenerate itself, because it's very good at that when we give it the opportunity to do so, and then how do we facilitate that process by using practices that lead to clean water, clean soil, clean air, so that work can happen.
And I think another great thing about what you're talking about, Emily, is just that some of these solutions also improve quality of life. They make our air, our water cleaner, making our communities healthier as well. So when we look at streams and wetland preservation, prairie restoration, these are things that not just, they not only reduce the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, but they also make our communities a better place, better places to live.
And Emily, you're involved in the organization Pachamama. Alliance.
Yes, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, so what is that?
So the Pachamama Alliance, the mission of the Pachamama Alliance is actually to bring forth an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on this planet. And Project Drawdown actually has partnered with the Pachamama Alliance to bring their work to the public and kind of make it accessible for people who are looking for a way to meaningfully engage around the issue of global warming.
And when I looked at the website for that alliance, it looked like it was centered heavily on activities in South America. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Pachamama Alliance was actually formed when the Achuar, they were experiencing some threats to their land, some oil development and things such as that. And so they kind of put a call out to what they call the modern world. And some people went there and met with the tribe and created a vision and an organization to share information in the modern world, so to speak, about the impacts of the ways that we're living and how the impacts on people, the planet, ecosystems, all of that. And so their work is really about having people get reconnected with the fact that we're really all connected and that what we do matters.
And you heard in the newscast that we started with, issues relating to, or maybe not issues, problems relating to fossil fuel promotion by the current Interior Secretary, and that's likely to continue. So what are some of the ways that you can work on this at the local or regional level, knowing that the federal government is not going to do anything, at least during the current administration?
Well, the Advancing Climate Solutions workshop that we held on December 8th was really the first step in taking action at a local level. You know, I'm an educator, that's my background, and so I think that when people are equipped with information, when they're equipped with facts and data and able to understand the problem, they're able to take action. And so that was really the first step, was getting a room full of leaders together. We had 130 join us, half of which were elected office holders, the rest were key experts and community members. And so with that group together, listening and learning and collaborating, making connections, I think from there we're going to be able to work together on finding some solutions that we can, you know, take on at a city level, but also regionally. So we do have some follow-up that we'll be doing. Mayor Kelly and I, who organized the workshop, will be following up with some other local leaders and a steering committee to decide what those next steps are that we can take at a city level, a county level, and a state level. And then again, just make sure that we are educating our leaders about what they can do. Because I think that's been the problem up until now with global warming, is the problem feels so big and overwhelming. Even, you know, you referenced the news at the top of this podcast. It feels so overwhelming that people don't know what they can do, and they also don't even know that they can take action. So that's why we felt this was so important.
At your workshop, you covered 80 factors or results that would create a plausible scenario and what needs to be done to reverse. And they're kind of ranked in order of importance. So, of course, we won't try to go through all 80 of them here, but if we can go through maybe the top 10. And a lot of people at the workshop, because I attended that as well, were, at least the table I was at, they were absolutely shocked about what number one was. So let me have you talk about that.
Yeah, I think so. Basically, the math of Drawdown is they looked at the impacts of a particular solution and then what would happen if that solution was scaled at a rigorous but reasonable rate over a 30-year period. And the number one solution that came out on their list was refrigerant management, which wasn't on a lot of people's radar at that point. But the materials used in refrigerants can be, they have a far greater impact on creating warming in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. So even a small release of those chemicals can have a very significant impact. And so the solution of refrigerant management that we're looking at really is recovering those refrigerants at the point of disposal and either purifying them for reuse or transforming them into other chemicals that don't create the same potential for causing warming in the atmosphere. And so it's information like this that we can look at and say, okay, this is on our radar. Let's look at how we can address this locally.
All right. And I think a lot of people maybe have been under the misunderstanding that the really bad refrigerants have been banned. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, they were called to be phased out, and there's actually an upgraded version of that, the hydrofluorocarbons that have been used to replace the CFCs and HCFCs that were used previously are now called to be phased out beginning next year. But again, we're looking at, you know, what's going to happen with all these chemicals as they're phased out, and then as even the CFCs and HCFCs that are still out there, what happens when they're disposed of. It's capturing those chemicals so they're not released into the atmosphere.
All right, so the more modern chemicals, they have to be, that were used to phase out the other ones, now they have to be phased out themselves.
Correct.
And so what is the plan as far as what is going to replace those refrigerants?
Well, I think to answer that question, I think I would need a little more scientific knowledge than I have. You can refer to some of the folks at the city who would be more mm-hmm. experts in that. I'm not involved in that decision-making process. I'm more looking at the solution of how do we recapture those chemicals at the point of disposal, making sure that they're not being released.
Well, in our workshop, we did have someone there from Solid Waste Management in Johnson County, and so we had people whose job it is to understand how we dispose of our waste, and they were able to learn about those things. So we're hoping they're going to take that information moving forward as they plan as well.
All right. And so going on the second in that top 10 or wind turbines. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I think it's been estimated that the wind potential in just three states could actually meet the demand of the entire country. Kansas is one of those states. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at the potential for wind, one of the things that is a benefit about it is that it can be combined with other solutions such as managed grazing or solar even. And so looking at how do we scale that in a way that allows for being kept away from migration routes for birds so that we're not creating damage there, but that we can implement the new turbine designs, and as it's scaled up even to the larger turbines, the potential for generating energy continues to increase mm-hmm. without the emissions that are associated with fossil fuels.
I think the other exciting thing about wind, especially in Kansas, is since we are the second with wind potential compared with other states, it also has the opportunity to bring a lot of job growth. And these are really high-paying, safe jobs for people. So it's one of those, again, a solution that also has added benefits helping our local economy. One thing that I learned today is our goal currently for the state of Kansas is to be at 20% renewable statewide, but we're already exceeding that goal at 35%, which is really, really good news. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe as state leaders look at that, they can even improve it further.
Okay. And you mentioned solar mm-hmm. at one point. And one of the guests I had on in the past raised some issues and concern that he had that we might be moving a little bit too fast because some of the what we think are solutions turn out to have negative impacts themselves. So what would your response be to that?
I do think, you know, solar has certainly grown more rapidly than predicted, and it's paced to become one of the least expensive sources of energy generation. I think that we have to be mindful as we look at any solution that we're looking to implement. I think part of when I think about what kind of got us into this mess, so to speak, in the first place is we engaged in practices and we weren't sure what the outcome was going to be. There's always going to be an element of that, but I think we have a lot of information now to look at what's our best option at this point, and how can we implement that mindfully with equity in mind. That's a big part of the message of Drawdown. As Lindsay's mentioned a couple times, the vast majority, almost all of the solutions that were measured by Project Drawdown are what they call no-regret solutions, which means that they have so many additional benefits that we'd want to do them anyway, even if they didn't reverse global warming. But having said that, I think we always want to be implementing solutions with an eye for what is this going to look like 30 years out? What is this going to look like 50 years out? What is this going to look like 100 years out? Some of the technology is changing, and we can't answer all of those questions now, but we certainly can have it on our radar and be mindful in thinking about the potential impacts.
And then in terms of geographic solutions, we talked about solutions that are probably more doable in the United States, Canada, your developed countries. How do you implement solutions like this when you're looking at undeveloped countries like in Africa or some of the poorest countries of South America?
Well, I will say that wasn't necessarily discussed in our workshop because we're focusing on what we can do based on our positions at a local level. So really that wasn't my framework for looking at the solutions. I was looking at the KC Metro, as were the leaders who were together. However, I would say that there's definitely an awareness in the scientific and the global community that we will need to support those developing nations in some way to help them meet those goals. But again, our focus is where we are today here in the KC Metro and what we can do.
All right. So we do need to take our first break. And when we come back in a few minutes, we will take phone calls. If you want to call, 816-931-5534 if you have any questions or comments.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. You don't have to quit your day job to make a difference on climate change.
No matter if you're in healthcare, media, journalism, science and tech, you can integrate sustainability, you can pursue it, and you can have both purpose and profit.
Marilyn Wade is the author of Sustainability at Work, Careers That Make a Difference. She says anyone can integrate their concerns about climate into their jobs. For example, if you're a teacher,
your role is to prepare these students for their future lives and careers. Of course, you can specialize within that. You can focus on environmental science, but you can also integrate it throughout your educational curriculum, no matter what the subject matter is.
Or let's say you're in finance. Natural disasters, resource shortages, and other climate change impacts can threaten investments. So Waite says it's essential to understand and weigh those risks. Office employees can encourage their companies to buy environmentally friendly products. Nurses can educate patients about climate-related health risks. The list goes on. The bottom line is that regardless of your job, addressing climate change is all in a day's work. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Hey, thank you for staying with us. This is Craig Lubow again. For those of you who are just joining us here on Eco Radio, we are talking to Emily Leiblet and Lindsay Constance, and we're talking about the solutions advocated in the book Drawdown. And they did a workshop on December 8th. So welcome back. And for those who have any calls or comments or questions, you can call us at 816-931-5534. Okay, so we were going through this list. The third was reduced food waste. And, of course, we know what a lot of reasons for reducing it, but what are some of the crucial environmental reasons for reducing that?
This one was one of the most interesting to me when I looked at the top 20 solutions, finding out that we actually waste about 35% of the food that is produced. And really the emissions are throughout the process. So, you know, producing that uneaten food generates greenhouse gases from the agricultural point with the methane, as well as transport and packaging all along the way. And then when that organic matter lands in the landfill, we have more greenhouse gases as well. So it was really interesting to me to find that the food we waste is responsible for about 8% of global emissions. And again, it's one of those examples. If we can reduce our food waste, not only are we reducing our greenhouse emissions, but we are also helping feed more people. And so it's one of those win-win solutions.
One of the guests that I've had on in the past, and actually I've had a few that have talked about this, but Harvesters was on. I had them on Radioactive Magazine. And I had a couple people relating to the food circle that was on here. And one of the statistics they all came with was that if we eliminate just 25% of all the food waste in the United States, we'd be able to feed all the hungry people in the United States.
Absolutely. Which, I mean, it's again, like you said, it's one of those solutions that really that has added benefit. We actually had someone that works for Harvesters at our workshop, so I'm sure that he was thinking about this in particular during that. So
we do have a caller on the line. Caller, if you'll state your first name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Angela. I'm calling from Williamsville, Missouri.
Okay, what's your question or your comment?
Well, first of all, kudos to Lindsay and Emily for what they're doing, drawing attention to the fact that there is a solution. But I would like to hear them talk a little bit about cost.
Yeah, we can talk about that. As I mentioned earlier, so many of the solutions are what we call no regrets. The majority of the solutions actually result in a savings. There are a couple that have a cost, like the refrigerant management, the number one solution. But when we look at the total of the 80 solutions implemented and scaled up, we're looking at a savings of $51 trillion. And so those are numbers that are pretty significant and people can latch on to. And so when we're looking at implementing solutions, I think part of what we want to talk about is how can we, as Lindsay mentioned, we're going to make the world a better place with a lot of these solutions, but how can we also save money? How can we create jobs? How can we create more healthy neighborhoods? How can we make sure that people get fed?
Great. Thank you.
And for those who are not familiar with it, there's an organization called Blue Green Alliance, which is an organization, it's an alliance between environmental movement and a number of the largest unions in the country. And their philosophy and what they're fighting for is green jobs, in that these environmental solutions will actually create more jobs than what they will cost.
Yes.
That's great.
So let's go to, I don't know if this kind of covers it or if there's something specific. You've got tropical forest. So I assume that overlaps some with deforestation.
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, you know, several of the solutions involve protecting forests or creating new forests, since we have cut down so many of them. I think the statistics look at about 48 football fields of trees are cut down every minute globally. Looking at tropical forest, we're looking at the sequestration. We're looking at the amount of carbon that's currently being sequestered and the impacts that will have if those trees are cut down and that carbon is released, as well as increasing the amount that's protected and generating new forests so that we can continue to build upon the carbon that's being sequestered.
And is the tropical forest, is that a more pertinent to the solution than, I know there's other types of forests like rainforest and cloud forest. So focusing on the tropical, is there a reason for that?
You know, I think part of the reason is that there's so much of the diversity on the planet is found in our tropical forests. And so, again, looking at those multiple benefits of the solutions, we're looking at the sequestration, we're looking at the viability for communities, we're looking at the opportunity to make our air cleaner, our water cleaner, our land cleaner. So tropical forest isn't the only solution on the list that addresses our forest system and our agricultural system and its ability to sequester carbon, but it's pretty high on the list.
Okay. Then you have, jumping down, number 6 and number 7, And I think they tend to overlap. Mm-hmm. You've got educating girls and then family planning. And from everything that I've learned about family planning and population growth, is that's directly correlated with educating girls. So tell us about those two factors.
I think in the workshop, many people were surprised by number 7 and 8, family planning and educating girls. We also learned that when combined, that actually moves up to the most important and effective thing that you can do to reduce global warming. So that was really interesting. I think, you know, the connection has to do with the fact that education really lays that foundation for women to make choices, for women to be in leadership positions, to earn income for their families, and it really just gives them a lot of opportunity to make their own choices about how many children they do want to have and what they want their lives to look like. So I think it was really encouraging to hear that, and as a teacher, you know, I can really see that on a day-to-day basis, that when kids and especially girls are educated, that the opportunities just really open up for them. But seeing that scientific connection between that and greenhouse emissions was definitely a surprise for me.
And you mentioned that you're a teacher a couple times. In terms of education in the schools about global warming, is it being taught more now? I remember when I was in school, we never heard the term global warming.
Well, it probably depends where you are. I would say that it's not something that is necessarily written into the standards. However, it's a part of a lot of the reading and things that we do as far as current events in science. So it's definitely something kids are really aware of. One thing that I found really moving in the last week that I'm sure you guys saw was Greta Thunberg, the Swedish teenager who spoke. I was just really moved by her. She spoke out to leaders and she just said, "You're stealing our future. You say you love us and you're not listening and you're not doing enough." And when she said that, it really brought this to home for me, as knowing that we have got to stand up and do something as local leaders. I mean, we've got these kids all over the planet that are counting on us. So.
And then we go to Silver Pasture. Tell us what that is, because I've never even heard that term.
Yeah, there's a number of food-related solutions, particularly when we look at the top 20. And so silvopasture, and again, I'm not an expert in this, but silvopasture is looking at combining, for example, trees, food-producing trees, as well as other kinds of trees, other kinds of agricultural products, along with grazing. It's kind of looking at a fully managed system that, again, has the benefits of sequestering carbon, as well as improving the quality of the food that's being grown and produced.
All right. And at the workshop, the Drawdown presents solutions in, let's see, 6 different sectors, is that right?
I believe there's 7.
Okay. So let me have you talk a little bit about each of those sectors, if you can start out with land use.
Yeah, I think when they were looking at all this information, they were looking at ways to kind of organize it and make it meaningful for people. So basically, when we're looking at the sectors, we're looking at land use, which involves our forest, peatlands, bamboo, perennial biomass, things like that. We have a sector that looks at energy. Of course, that has a lot of solutions related to renewable energy. We have the transport sector, which we would expect would be, you know, on that list of solutions to be looking at for reversing global warming. We also have a sector of food, and that's one of the largest sectors that we're looking at because it's so critical. The way that we grow and produce and transport and consume our food, we really need to take a look at that if we want to have an impact on global warming. We have materials, which again includes the refrigerant management as well as household recycling and things like that. We have the sector of women and girls, which includes the education and family planning, as well as women smallholders. And then we have a category of buildings and cities, which includes, you know, the walkable cities and the solutions that really look at how we're laying out our cities and how we're moving about.
I think one really helpful thing about the way in which Emily presented the information at the workshop is just to know that there are these different categories, because it helped the elected officials and the leaders there really hone into where their area of expertise might be. So, for example, cities in KCMO might look at LED lighting and creating walkable cities in their planning, whereas our state legislators that represent more the agricultural western side of Kansas, they might be looking at wind turbines and agricultural practices. So thinking about them in terms of those really helps folks to kind of collaborate around shared interests and shared solutions and really have a framework for moving forward.
All right. And I think you said before that the renewables are around 35% now.
We are currently
Kansas.
At 35%, yes.
Okay. And that's statewide in
Kansas? Statewide.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What is the realistic goal, let's say 10 years from now, where do you think we might be?
Well, I am not an expert on the legislature, so I don't know if, for me, a 50% goal, it sounds like a great place to start. Some of the conversations that Mayor Kelly and I are going to have moving forward are speaking with some of the other leaders that were there and learning about what is the political climate, where are we, what would be a realistic goal that is also, an inspiring goal to move us forward. So we're going to be having those conversations with legislators and leaders and other organizations like the Sierra Club and Climate Energy Project to really learn from them. Because I'm definitely not an expert in that particular area.
Right.
So,
and I don't know, was recycling on your list of 80?
Yes, there's some solutions around recycling that make the list. And I would just like to add to what Lindsay said. When we look at the different sectors, part of how we can use this information, too, is to look to see where the gaps are. Part of what we know about the solutions and the information that Drawdown has shared is that we need them all. There's no silver bullet. There's no one solution that's going to save us. We can transition to 100% renewable energy, and that's wonderful, and it's necessary, and it's insufficient. We need all the solutions and the synergistic nature of how they work together to actually achieve the goal of reversal. So the sectors allows us to look at what are the successes that we can really build upon and scale up, and then where might the gaps be where we can increase implementation.
Okay. And from the looking at reversal of the global warming, and I don't know how familiar you are with the specifics of the Paris Accords, which of course the current administration has backed out of, but how much does that meet the goal of reversal as opposed to just keeping it where it is?
Yeah, I would say so when the folks who engaged in the Project Drawdown published their work, they titled it the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming. And they did that kind of cheekily to make the point that it's the only plan that's ever been proposed to actually reverse global warming. Everything that we've been looking at up until this point has been around mitigation, let's slow it down, let's reduce emissions. And, one thing that I've heard Paul Hawkins say over and over again is that at the point that we're at this point in time with the current amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the goal of reversal is the only goal that makes sense. Like simply slowing down, going the wrong way, doesn't mean we're no longer going the wrong way, right? We actually want to stop and turn around and look at reversing the warming trend that we've created. And so this is the first plan that's actually looked at actually achieving the goal of reversal.
All right. And the current carbon in the atmosphere, I think, is 402.
I believe it's around 400.
I think it's the latest number that I heard, I think, was 407. But one of the things that they talk about in Drawdown is that when you include the other greenhouse gases, the methane, nitrous oxides, and other things, we're actually looking at a number that's closer to 490. And, there's reason for concern. And, again, that's part of why we're looking at let's go all in. Let's look, like Lindsay said, let's go for that inspirational goal. Let's actually look at reversal. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is really beautiful about the work of Drawdown is that all of these solutions are already in play. We're mm-hmm. already doing them. We actually do know what to do, yes. and we're doing it. And so our job at this point is really to find the people who are doing this work, support them in whatever way we can, fund them so that they can do more of it, and look at, on a community level, how we can be part of implementing the solutions right here, right now, where we live.
All right. And I believe we need to take our second break now. And when we come back, we will take more phone calls at 816-931-5534.
Most times, KKFI moves against the stream, but just saying play KKFI to your smart speaker will bring our stream to you, KKFI, wherever you are.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and if you want to join this conversation, come on and give us a call. Don't wait until the last minute to do so. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
Hi, Bill Sundahl here. This is a message to all you retired federal employees out there. I would like to inform you that the Combined Federal Campaign is now open to retirees and their surviving family, as well as those federal employees still working. And this is new this year in 2018. So you can learn all about how to support the nonprofits you care about at cfcgiving.opm.gov, or just search online for CFC Giving. Since 1961, the CFC has raised over $8.2 billion in donations. So please consider KKFI in your giving this year with CFC code 21994. Again, that website is cfcgiving.opm.gov, or just search online for CFC Giving. Thank you so much for your support.
When it comes to runoff, less is more on this current cast. Too much rain and too many people using a lot of water can overwhelm aging stormwater systems. That can cause them to overflow and dump pollution into rivers. Instead of rebuilding systems or adding bigger pipes, many cities are turning to green infrastructure to meet clean water standards by creating green space where plants and soils can capture rainwater and runoff.
Less is being sent through the pipes, and there's a less chance for overflows.
That's Katie Rousseau of the nonprofit American Rivers. She says rain gardens, storage ponds, and permeable pavement, which treat stormwater at its source, are a real solution and cost less than fixing old systems. CurrentCast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. Online at currentcast.org.
All right, we are back. Thank you for staying with us. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, if you'll state your first name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Richard, Richard Mabian, and I'm calling from over in Kansas City, Kansas. I was at the conference there, at the meeting, the session there over at the Village Presbyterian. Plus, I'm a host here on KKFI. I really am excited about the program we have going on tonight, and I'm really loving listening to you all talking. But I wanted to call in to speak to Paul Hawkins. Paul Hawkins was responsible for me being in the environmental movement. I mean, meeting him when he wrote his book, The Blessed Unrest. And the one thing he said at the meeting the other day that captivated my attention was that most of what we are doing is speculation. We really don't know what the sum total of what we are doing may accomplish. And I wanted to hear what your thoughts are on that. And the reason I'm saying it, and the work that I'm doing over in Kansas City, Kansas, And if you notice, I was probably one of the few of the black people that was there at the session, and especially from Kansas City, Kansas. I'm teaching and working with young folks and telling them that this is a level playing field that they have, where they too can be the discoverer of possible solutions. So what do you all think about that?
I think... Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. And I think when addressing your comment about the speculative nature of the work, one of the things that was mentioned in the video that we showed of him is that he's talking about the science is really speculative in terms of the impacts and what we can expect in the future. it's good science, but we can't predict the entire synergistic nature of what's going to be happening with our climate system. And I think the same is true when we look at implementing the solutions. Mm-hmm. Part of what we know is the solutions that have been modeled by Project Drawdown work together, and that's why I go back to we need them all, right? And so that's why we need both sides of that coin. We have to reduce emissions, but we also have to bring carbon back home. And in terms of, you know, the level playing field, gosh, I sure wish that was true across every aspect of our country. And I think that part of what I try to talk with people a lot about in the work that I do around this issue is every single one of us has a role to play if we choose to play that role. And I think looking at how do we get involved right here, right now in our communities. I think when we look at this, so much of the communication about global warming, as an individual, I am so often told in the articles that I read that my options are either to A, change my light bulbs and eat less meat or drive less, or contact my legislators. I'm not given any effective pathway to engage. And so what I do in the workshops that I lead is talk with people about how do we get involved locally. We get in touch with our local schools, our churches, our businesses, our restaurants, and we talk with them about what are you guys interested in terms of either saving money or playing your part in making a difference in this effort? How can you reach out to your community and be part of what we want to build here? Let's look at planting urban gardens. There are so many ways that we can get involved right where we live that, as Lindsay mentioned earlier, not only reduce emissions or reverse global warming, but also make our communities more equitable, more safe, and more healthy for the residents who live there.
Well, and another thing that, Richard, your comments made me think is just the fact that what might happen is uncertain is also, I mean, another way to say that might be just that there's a lot of possibility for innovation. I mean, Paul Hawken in his book said we see global warming as not as an inevitability, but as an invitation to build, innovate, and affect change. And it's a pathway that awakens creativity, compassion, and genius. And probably my biggest takeaway from the workshop was the level of energy, excitement, collaboration among those who were there. And honestly, it completely exceeded my expectations. So I think that we are right now facing the biggest problem that we have ever faced, honestly, as a civilization. So why not just, I guess, embrace that uncertainty and see what we can create together. So, and we're glad you were there, and we're glad that you're with us moving forward.
Very pleased being at that conference, and I am a convert. You have my 150% support, and to make what you're trying to do a reality in our community. So good luck, and understand you got me with you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I just wanted to take a moment and kind of point out, so I am not a legislator. I'm an educator. I'm an activist. I'm a community person. And I just want to really give kudos to Lindsay and Mike Kelly for having the vision to put this event together and to be so committed. I am so inspired and so hopeful when I see their commitment to not have this workshop be a one-off event where, hey, that was great, and then we all go home. They are so committed to keeping these people together, continuing to make action, to create pathways for action moving forward and to make these solutions real right here where we live.
Mike mentioned that on Democracy Now! Ralph Nader was on and said he no longer uses the phrase global warming and those terms.
Or even climate change.
Okay. And so he's using the term climate disruption now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said that's what you're using.
Yeah, that's a term that there's so much misinformation, there's so many preconceived notions and thoughts and things to argue about when we talk about climate change. I think what we're looking at is, you know, I think first we have to acknowledge that the atmosphere is actually a beautiful system. It's actually what protects us on this planet. And so we so often talk about it like it's the enemy. We have to tackle, fight, slash, beat climate change, right? But I think what we're looking at is, you know, human activity is causing warming in our atmosphere, and that's leading to disruptions in our climate. Whatever we want to call it, that's the bottom line. And so I think our language does matter, but I think, you know, more importantly, when we look at that topic of the language that we use. One of the things that I love about Lindsay and Mike's approach and the work of Drawdown is that it's about solutions. We can argue all day long about what we think and why we think it, and that doesn't really matter when we're looking at, let's just go make the world a better place. Let's implement these solutions and see what we can create together. And I know my inbox is so often inundated with what I call headlines of doom, right? There's so much bad news. And we know the psychology of that causes people to disengage. And but when we can give people opportunities to engage, when they can see a pathway and see themselves in the solution, they are willing to take action. And that's what we want to create with our communication.
Okay. And Lindsay, you had used the term or said that the earth is always capable of regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that's important to understand, that if we fail to act and we don't implement solutions, you know, we may knock out a lot of species, humans might become extinct, etc. But the planet itself will always be here. And so if we destroy life as we know it, the planet will have a way of finding new forms of life.
That is correct.
Probably. I think that's true, but I think for how many of us is that the goal? Like, that's not my goal. Like, I'm not here to, like, wipe everything out, right? I think we want to look at we're at a place that the math is telling us, the science is telling us, we're at a place where we can still restore balance. And I say, let's do it.
Well, you know, and I, being a teacher and having two children of my own, I can tell you that my goal is to make sure that they have a future ahead of them that is bright and full of possibility. So I'm going to do absolutely everything I can to make that happen.
Okay. And so we're about out of time. For those who have just joined us, you've been listening. Our topic has been climate solutions based upon the book Drawdown. And we had Emily Libra and Lindsay Constance here. And so coming up next is our calendar. And for those who missed part of the show, the podcast will be up later as well.
Now the calendar of events for the week of 12/17. Pell Gardens Festival of Lights began yesterday and will be Thursday through Sunday evenings, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m., from 12/16 to 1/6/19. Go to pellgardens.org. Green Drinks will be in Lawrence at Merchants on 12/19. Go to the Green Drinks Lawrence Facebook page. There'll be a Sustainability Action Network meeting Thursday, December 20th at 6:45 in the Lawrence Creates Makerspace, 9th and New Jersey, Lawrence, Kansas. Help with recycling at the Red Bridge Recycling Center, 5200 East Red Bridge Road, Kansas City, Missouri. They have Wednesdays and Saturdays. Contact bridgingthegap.org to sign up. These events and more can be viewed on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page and at the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page.
Missed last week's Eco Radio KC? No worries. You can listen online at kkfi.org.
What's that sound, you ask?
It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
Dr. Seuss stops a gas pipeline. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Paris Agreement on Climate Change was kept alive at the UN conference called COP24, which concluded Saturday in Poland.
Delegates from 200 countries produced a 156-page rulebook about how nations will report their progress to limit carbon emissions.
There was concern that the U.S. would weaken the agreement. However, the New York Times reports U.S. negotiators worked constructively behind the scenes with other countries, including China, on transparency rules.
Highly visible visible were the many young people in attendance. 15-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden admonished delegates, saying the planet was being exploited by the wealthy few.
Our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few.
Investors agree that urgent action is needed. According to The Guardian, some of the world's biggest pension funds, insurers, and asset managers issued a stark warning that without cuts in carbon emissions and the phase out of coal, the world faces a financial crash several times worse than that in 2008.
The Congress passed a massive farm bill last week with many environmental provisions, including increased funding for a program that prioritizes projects to protect drinking water and reduce harmful toxic algae blooms.
As Mother Jones reports, the bill also incentivizes farmers to use environmentally friendly soil management practices like reduced tillage, planting cover crops, and crop rotations in a way that sequesters carbon.
Farmers will be able to get insurance when planting cover crops, which had in the past been problematic.
Another part of the bill allows farmers to grow hemp, taking it off the controlled substances list where it had been alongside drugs like heroin.
Early drafts of the bill included a rider that would have stopped local governments from regulating or restricting the use of pesticides in places like parks, playgrounds, and schools. But that provision was removed from the final legislation.
The organization Food and Water Watch applauded the bill, which makes important progress in organic food programs, including funding for research.
The bill is expected to be signed into law this coming week.
A growing consumer backlash against disposable plastics is driving a change in how water is bottled.
Department stores, zoos, and public facilities in the U.S. and Europe have stopped selling plastic water bottles, and a proposed bill in New York would ban the sale of them at parks, golf courses, and beaches.
Beverage companies are responding by attempting to develop a bottle made completely from recycled plastic, which has been a problem in the past due to discoloration and structural issues. Danone, the company that produces Evian, is betting on a new technology that can hopefully turn old plastics into new containers.
While Evian currently makes only 30% of its bottles from recycled plastic, it has pledged to make all of them from the materials by 2025.
One industry watcher told the Wall Street Journal that the importance of the matter has sunk in because of the broadened awareness of the environment, especially with millennials.
There's been an invasion of the U.S. by a new species of tick from Asia, and it has officials at the Centers for Disease Control worried about the spread of viruses and other pathogens.
The Asian longhorn tick is the first new variety of the arachnid to be found in the country in 80 years. As reported in Entomology Today, it's quickly moving across the eastern U.S. from Connecticut to Arkansas.
The critter thrives in areas of moderate temperature, humidity, and precipitation, which could include a large swath of the eastern U.S. as well as the coastal Pacific Northwest.
The newly detected species is very adaptable and can transmit disease, although to date it's not affected humans. The ticks can attack a cow or other livestock by the thousands and weaken them by depleting their blood supply. The female ticks reproduce without being fertilized, in effect producing clones.
Infections to humans from ticks in general are a big problem. The CDC reported in May that nearly 60,000 tick-borne infections were reported last year, but due to underreporting, they estimate the total number of actual cases may be as high as 300,000.
And finally, it's not often that you hear Dr. Seuss being quoted in federal court, but that's what happened last week when judges reprimanded the U.S. Forest Service for permitting a natural gas pipeline across two national forests and the Appalachian Trail.
Repeating the words of the small, fluffy Lorax who tried to save his beloved Trifula trees from a greedy industrialist, a three-judge appellate panel slammed the agency, saying, "We trust the United States Forest Service to speak for the trees. For the trees have no tongues."
The Washington Post reports that the judges concluded that the Forest Service had raised proper environmental questions early in its permit process, but those issues were suddenly and mysteriously assuaged in time to meet a private company's deadlines.
The court said that the agency's decisions violated both the National Forest Management Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, and found the Forest Service lacked the authority to grant the pipeline a right-of-way across the Appalachian Trail.
The underground natural gas pipeline is being built by Virginia-based Dominion Energy and would stretch over 600 miles across West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. A spokesperson for Dominion and its partners said they will immediately appeal the decision, saying it will severely harm consumers and do great damage to our economy and energy security.
Lawyers for the Southern Environmental Law Center, who brought the case, hailed it as a major victory. And if the Lorax could rise up from the pages, he might applaud it as well. Even though he wasn't able to save his fictional truffula trees, he helped the judges save a real forest instead.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Explore new trends in technology at ACE 19, June 9th through 12th in Denver. Learn more at awwaace.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to 90.1.